Morning, Senator.
Thank you so much for having me, as always.
The Senate Foreign Relations Committee has passed a bill that will require congressional approval of any nuclear deal with Iran. Now, if this bill passes, the president has actually said he will sign it, which is a bit surprising because White House spokesman Josh Earnest admitted that the president was not exactly thrilled with it. So what happened to get this going and get presidential approval?
Well, I think there was just an overwhelming feeling in Congress that this, you know, when you're talking about a treaty, an agreement, whatever you want to call it, which is so important, that it does rise to the standard that something that Congress needs to weigh in. And so they not only voted it out of committee, but the vote was unanimous. And so I think that's really the feeling of Congress, that they need to weigh in and be a part of this.
So you expect it to pass and go on to the president's desk?
Yes, sir, I think so. Again, with that kind of vote coming out of committee and then the rhetoric, people understand this is about nuclear war that our children and grandchildren might face. If Iran goes nuclear, then Saudi Arabia will go nuclear, Turkey will go nuclear, Egypt will go nuclear. Nuclear proliferation in the Middle East is certainly not anything that's going to make any of us any safer.
What action do you think Congress is going to take on the deal with Iran?
Well, we don't really know what the deal is yet, and so I think the first step, very importantly, is what the Foreign Affairs Committee did, reporting out of committee. Now it'll come before the whole Senate. I think we'll get a very, very bipartisan vote that we need to weigh in, and then at some point the administration will reach an agreement with the Iranians, and then immediately, based on this bill, we'll be able to know exactly what that agreement is. Right now, it's difficult because, you know, if you listen to the framework that the Iranians are talking about versus what the administration is talking about, they're totally opposite. So we'll have all of the working papers and things and be able to decide exactly what the agreement looks like, and then at that point be able to weigh in.
Well, we know some of the stipulations that are at least being discussed, being the lifting of the conditional lifting of sanctions on Iran in exchange for there being more transparent about their nuclear program and us being to check and test and make sure that they're keeping up their end of the agreement. Now, many Iranians are excited about the prospect of the sanctions being lifted. Do you think there's enough support in Iran for that economic relief to pressure the Iranian government to keep up its end of the agreement?
Well, I would hope so. You know, the question is, you know, when do you release the sanctions? Do you do it after they, you know, are working in good faith and allowing the, you know, the necessary inspections and things like that, as opposed to just lifting it on the first day? So, you know, the thing that has driven the Iranians to the bargaining table right now is the sanctions. They've been effective. And the other thing is, you know, the question comes up, well, you know, what if we can't reach an agreement that really does make it such that Iran doesn't develop a nuclear weapon? What's the next step? And I think the next step would be actually to continue with the sanctions and ratchet those up, because they are having a significant effect on the Iranian economy.
There are many people on the left of the spectrum who think that believe that Republicans are just itching for war with Iran.
No, I don't think that. You know, nobody wants a war with anybody at this point. The world is such a dangerous place. Our troops are spread so thin as it is now, and Iran is a country that has lots of resources. It's got a large population. It's got a group that militarily have done quite well in the last several years. So this is about, again, preventing Iran from going nuclear, which is about a situation of our national security. But as the Prime Minister of Israel pointed out, it's about Israel's existence. So it's just important for so many, many reasons, and we simply cannot allow them to go nuclear.
Well, moving to a different part of the region, Pentagon spokesman Colonel Steve Warren told reporters this week that the self-proclaimed Islamic State has lost 25% to 30% of its territory in Iraq since coalition airstrikes began in August. Now, these airstrikes have been assisting forces in the region who are fighting IS forces. Does that strategy seem to be working?
Well, you know, it was good news, I think, you know, hearing him say that. So Hopefully that is the case, and ISIS is an enemy that is ferocious, barbaric, and we need to do all that we can to assist whoever in fighting them, airstrikes, and then others providing boots on the ground, us providing military assistance, as we can, particularly to the Kurds, who are great allies of ours and somebody that we can, trust.
Yeah, and the Kurdish forces seem to be really doing a good job in their battle there.
Yes, we're very much so. And again, these have been allies of ours for many, many years, and somebody that we can trust. And I very much support arming them and helping them in every way that we can, thus providing our boots on the ground for us.
Now, do we know about any civilian deaths that are occurring from these airstrikes? Because there's always concern that drone strikes may be hitting innocents, which might inflame more anti-American sentiment and maybe promote more recruitment and radicalization in the region.
Well, we're in a situation now where we have the most modern weapons imaginable, and yet, war is war, and you're going to have unintended casualties as a result of war. So I can say that I think that we're doing everything that we can to make sure that those types of things don't happen, but I'm sure that they do happen on occasion. But I don't know that there's really any way to prevent that.
Another hot spot in that area right now is Yemen, where an internal conflict is attracting attention from its neighbor, Saudi Arabia. They're getting involved, and that's prompting concern from other countries in the region, like Iran, and concern here in the U.S.
Yes, sir, it is. And Saudi Arabia is, and some of its allies have really ramped up. Yemen has become a failed state. We've actually had to remove our forces out of there. The Iranians are there, and so there's concern. With the spread of the Iranian footprint throughout the Middle East.
Well, the president is working on a free trade deal with countries in the Asia-Pacific region, a Trans-Pacific Partnership that actually has support, I understand, from Republicans and opposition from many who usually support the president.
Well, the Trade Promotion Authority, what we're trying to work through, it's difficult for any president, it would be difficult for anybody to work an agreement without having the authority to actually negotiate in good faith without everybody else stepping in at the same time. So this gives the president that authority, and so I've supported that in the past and want to support it in the future. What we need to do is look and see what exactly that entails, whether it allows things like immigration to be included, that there's real concern about unchecked immigration, and so we'll just have to see the details. But I think many members of Congress, I think the majority, are committed to trying to strike not a free trade deal, but a fair trade deal that's actually good for the countries involved, ourselves and them. Here in the United States, I think we have to have the attitude that we've got 20 customers here and 80 customers living overseas and do our best to service them.
Well, Senator, I know you were in Arkansas last week. Matter of fact, visiting Jonesboro here and visiting the ASU campus, I understand.
I was. I was at the Beck Pride Center, and they do such a tremendous job, helping veterans. And not only them, but the others in the community, the area, the state that support their efforts. It really is a great story. It's just how, public-private partnerships can come together and really meet a need.
Now, you're still hearing problems about the VA, healthcare providers talking about reimbursement problems with the VA. What are the concerns? How is this affecting our veterans?
Well, we are hearing concerns, and we had a meeting in Little Rock, organized a meeting, brought all of the stakeholders together, the providers, the key people at the VA, for them to sit down and really talk about the problems. And the VA contracts out when they don't have the ability to perform a certain function. Sometimes there's emergencies that are involved where, another provider that's not a VA person has to do it. The problem is that they aren't paying the people in a timely fashion. And so as a result of that, my concern is that not only is that unfair, but makes it such that the providers will quit doing that in the future, and all of that makes it so that you have a lesser quality of VA care for the future.
Are things getting any better with the Veterans Administration? I've been seeing stories about whistleblowers actually suffering some retaliation within the organization.
Well, that's simply inexcusable, and I think things are getting better. I think just the fact that, you know, these things are rising to the surface so that we can talk about it, you know, is good. The committees are working really hard to do the oversight function. The new administrator, I think is doing, you know, as good a job as he can in the sense of trying to address these things. But it's a huge bureaucracy, and we have to change the culture. Saying all that, though, we're blessed in Arkansas. We've got two really fine facilities at Fayetteville and at Little Rock, and the feedback I get from the veterans that attend those facilities as far as health care really is very, very good, and so, you know, we're working hard to keep that up.
Well, you're on the Senate Agriculture Committee as well, and I understand you're holding a hearing next week about Cuba. This is an exciting prospect for a lot of Arkansas farmers about this potential new trading partner. There is some opposition to opening up this relationship. Do you have any concerns about it?
No, I'm very much in favor of it for a number of reasons. As you mentioned, this is something that really would be a real boost for Arkansas agriculture. The Cuban people eat a lot of poultry and a lot of rice, things like that. They import almost all of that. Back before the Castro brothers, most of that came from the United States. So it's just a natural market. But besides that, you know, when you trade, you're not only trading goods and services, but you're trading ideas. You're trading information. And I think that's how you change the country of Cuba. The process that we've been doing for the last several decades hasn't worked. I think that's the way that you change these countries. The other thing is, I think you have to be consistent. And we're in a situation now where we trade with a lot worse actors in the sense of human rights, or certainly as bad, people like China, Vietnam, Saudi Arabia. The list goes on and on. But I think that with the Cuban culture being so similar to ours, that we've got an excellent chance of, through trade and the personal relationships, of really making a difference, not only for the people of Arkansas in boosting trade, but for the Cuban people.
I'm just about out of time. I appreciate your time today, sir.
Well, thank you so much, as always, for having me.
Senator John Bozeman joining us from his office in Washington. You're listening to Morning Edition.